Webinar with Adam R. Welcome to 3PNR. I'm your host, Adam R., and with me on this episode is Mindy Totfest from MUFON. Mindy, how you doing?
Doing good, Adam. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on. It's a pleasure. Let's start off with, you know, the simple. What got Mindy down the road of investigating ufology?
Oh, my goodness, Adam. That that could be a very long conversation here.
Want to hear it. Trust me.
It's not quite a direct line from, you know, seeing a UFO to becoming a UFO investigator for me. My journey takes me through pretty much every kind of paranormal event that you could have. When I was about five, I had my first sighting of a ghost, which was seeing my grandfather the night that he passed away, standing at the foot of the bed. And I realized that he had his leg back because he had had it amputated due to gangrene and complications of diabetes. And I realized something wasn't quite right there and realized that he had, in fact, passed on and had come to say goodbye. And so that was kind of my first interaction with something other than what would be considered normal. That ended up giving way to when we moved when I was 8 years old. And that house was actually inhabited by what people call a shadow person. And in particular, this house had one that's known as the Hat Man. And he wears a tall hat and like a cloak. And he walked the halls of that home for the entire time that I lived there. And my mother actually still lives in that home and still has some interaction sometimes from him as well. And so that kind of got me interested in the paranormal. I wondered why I was having these kinds of interactions, and most people did not. And so I ended up joining a team of ghost hunters in my 20s. There was a local team here in Oklahoma called Cooley, and I had gone on a ghost tour and become good friends with the owner of that tour. Her name was Tanya Hacker, and she invited me into the team, and we went on several investigations here around Oklahoma and Oklahoma City in particular. And I learned how to do EVP and really got interested in the whole subject. In the meantime, I had sought out the church because I was raised Christian and I really had questions, you know, why was I having these kinds of events happening whenever I had prayed for them to stop and didn't necessarily want them around me. And so I ended up meeting a pastor online and met up with him over coffee to discuss some of the things that were going on. And we ended up getting together. We were married by the end of the year. and so he really kind of helped me along looking into finding answers within the Bible. And so a lot of my views at that time around the paranormal centered around what was taught in the church and specifically in the Southern Baptist tradition. And so I had some pretty strict views on it. And I wasn't really looking to get into ufology at that point in my life. And as I, you know, had children and married life came into play, everything kind of fell by the wayside as far as paranormal. The events stopped happening and I was happy for it. And that all changed on election day 2016. And that was, of course, the presidential election between President Trump and Hillary Clinton. And so that day had started kind of like any other. Got up, my face was a little bit swollen that morning. And I had taken some pictures and sent them to my husband and said, my face is swollen. I don't know. It could be an allergic reaction. And he said, well, why don't you take a Benadryl and go take a warm bath and see if that clears it up. And I said, okay. So I did that. And when I got out, I felt better. And it was nearing early afternoon. So I was expecting him to come home pretty soon. And at that time, he was teaching at the local school. We were living out on a 300-acre wheat farm in northern Oklahoma, like in the middle of nowhere at this point. And so I was expecting him to get home soon with the kids. And I sat down on the couch to kind of check to see if there were any early exit polls or anything going on. And when I did, I suddenly heard a loud gunshot go off in my head. And I initially thought maybe I had been shot in the head. There had been hunters out around our property who had been hunting coyotes in the weeks leading up to that event. And so I thought maybe that's what had happened. I was an ICU nurse for 10 years. And so I was trained in medicine. I kind of, my first instinct was start to assess what was going on with me. And so I tried to focus on the back of my head to see if I could feel any blood coming down or anything. I know that's kind of graphic, but that's kind of where I was at the point. And when I didn't notice anything like blood that I could feel, I realized that I had probably ruptured an aneurysm. And at that point, I started feeling almost like an electric avalanche that came down from the top of my head, peeled away. It almost felt like layers were peeling off of me from the top of my head down to my toes. And I started realizing, okay, this is it. I'm really dying here. This is going to be the end. And so I started kind of pleading with God at that point. I realized that my kids were going to be walking in the front door, and I was sitting right in front of there. And every day they would kind of run in from school and give me big hugs and kisses and be so excited and tell me about their day. And they were 6 and 8 at that time. And I was just crushed knowing that they were going to come in and they were going to find my body. And so I was very distraught. And I cried in my spirit, really. And I was just really lost in that thought and begging God whenever I realized that I was in pure darkness. And I started looking around and I said, okay, I'm really dead now. I'm not on earth any longer.
Was this a medical experience, like an actual medical experience?
Yes, absolutely. I had what's called a vertebral artery dissection. And there was two big chunks that were ripped out of the side, my right vertebral artery, which leads straight up into my brain. It's a type of aneurysm crossed with a stroke. And I was 36 at the time. This was 5 years ago that this happened. But I went to the other side. My first instinct was, strangely enough, to try to clap my hands.
that's your training in hand. All right. Am I here?
So I tried to clap my hands and I realized that I had none. I was trying to see if I had, you know, if I could see my hands in front of me. Cause it seemed like it wasn't dark, but there was just nothing to see around me. And so I realized I didn't have any form. I was literally just my thought floating in this dark abyss.
It sounds like you were in a substate. That's what it sounds like, the in-between.
Absolutely.
Because I do a lot of interviews off podcast also, and mm-hmm. I hear that a lot. That's very common. And
And I've come to know it as the void. Before being a Christian, I had no idea where I was. That's part of what I did over there. I started looking around thinking maybe a tunnel of light would appear, you know, and I'm looking for family members and I'm looking for Jesus and I'm waiting and nothing happens. And so I just start praying and I'm praying for my children. I'm praying for my husband and my Christianity kicks in. I'm praying that Christ will stand in my place, that I'm not worthy to go to heaven. And I'm worried about judgment. You know, I'm either going to be in heaven forever. I'm going to go to hell forever, you know, and I'm kind of freaking out. And the more time that went on, I started realizing that no one's coming for me. And I realized just how cut off I was from everything. And Adam, I'll tell you, I felt creation all around me, but I was separate from it. I wasn't allowed to be part of it.
It wasn't your time, and they put you into a waiting area.
That's exactly what I've come to realize. At the time, it wasn't so easy. It was the most terrifying. And
so, you know what I've been told? I'm told that that period of time is a reflection time. Yes. And that's self-reflection. It's one of those periods of time where you really take a gaze to who you are and things about your life. So typically in that, and from what I understand anyway, when you're in that phase, usually you're not ready to depart, and you're allowed to reflect. And coming from that reflection gears you in a new direction in life.
Right. And you hit it on the head right there, Adam. That's kind of what it turned into for me. I was so distraught. I mean, my spirit was just so heavy. And I started reflecting. That's exactly what it led to. And I started thinking, okay, why am I not good enough? Why did I not make it to heaven? You know, I'm trying to come to grips with the fact that I've been ripped out of my life. You know, I have young children at home. I wasn't ready to give that up at all. I wanted to see them grow up. I wanted to grow old with my husband. And I was angry about that. But I didn't understand why, now that I'm over on this side, why am I not going straight to heaven? And so I did. Why am I not good enough?
I could tell by the tone of your voice that event mm-hmm. still troubles you.
It does. We just went through the fifth anniversary, and I'm finally able to talk about it without breaking down and falling. It was soul crushing.
So let me give you some insight. And I guess we'll circle back. I'm going to cover a couple things real quick before we move into ufology anyway.
Okay.
One, the entities, when you're praying against them to leave you alone, understand that these entities have free will like you and I. You know,
yes.
they exist in different planes. Two, we're all composite of energy, pure energy. And I say this to a lot of people, whether you're a Christian or a non-believer, all the same. When you look at the cosmic web and the construct of that, and then you look at a human brain in imaging, and you can see it in infrared, there's a similar construct there. So there's definitely a source someplace, right? Now, for you in your case, and I hope this sheds light on what you're feeling. I think our soul is actually our consciousness. It's pure energy. It's one and the same. Soul and consciousness, one and the same. And that's probably why science can't say, well, we can't find a soul. Well, it's because it's our consciousness. And science also can't answer what consciousness is. It's one and the same. It's pure energy. That's what these entities are, these spirits. They're left behind. Now, I have this theory, my personal theory, that, and this theory evolved, right? Because before this podcast started, my thoughts were, when the brain turned off your supercomputer, that's it. It's over, right? I've evolved from that. I've speaking to some afterlife people, a lot of paranormal people, religious mm-hmm. people. So I think Earth is a proving ground, because if you look at the cosmic web, it's everything's connected like fiber optic cables all through the universe. And so this is our proving ground. And the creator, who's at the source of all this connection, depending on what you do here, you could be a really bad person and you're going to get recycled or reincarnated or whatever word you want to use. And you got to start again. You've been a real jerk. Or in your case, you've been a fantastic person. We're going to recycle you. You could stay here and do greater things for humanity once again, and or you go to the next plane. Or in your case, we're not done with you yet. You're not done here. You have other things to do. So we're going to allow you to reboot with the help of your fellow man. That's the reality I live in. That's from everything I've studied and read. And again, before I started the podcast, for me, when the lights went out, that was it. The evolution of me is I see things very, very differently now. It allows me to look logically at it. Because
I think that you're absolutely on the right track, because I mean, you're literally taking the words out of my mouth. This is the same road I was going to lead you down to tell you the truth. Let me pick up where I was on the other side. And you'll see kind of where I'm going and why I agree with you so much. So while I was there in the void and I was praying, I did the self-reflection and I realized, okay, it's not that I have a lack of love for other people. It's a lack of love for myself that has held me back throughout my life. And I realized that, and I was so deeply sorrowful that I had not loved myself enough to live life the way that I needed to and the way I had wanted to. I was too fearful of what people would think of me, you know? And at that point, I felt a presence come into my area where I was cut off. And it felt like a male presence that came in. And it wasn't Jesus. It was not my grandpa. It wasn't anybody I knew. It felt like it was an office worker. Like he was almost like, it felt like he was breaking the rules to come in and comfort me because I was so distraught. And he just kind of telepathically told me, "You're not going to be here forever." And as soon as he did that, and I'll tell you, I couldn't even tell you that he was human was the main thing that stuck with me. He didn't necessarily give off human vibes or anything. It was just a male presence.
I'm glad you said that.
So he said, "You're not here forever." And whenever he did that, I started sailing off to the left. And as I sailed through this dark abyss to the left, in front of me and kind of to the right was this kind of purple glow that I started seeing. And it was the first thing that I saw there, the whole experience. And as I got closer to it, it looked like a nebula. It was purple clouds. And inside of it had these pink intersecting lines. And where they joined up, it glowed like really bright yellow. And I thought, well, that looks like, you know, like a map of brain neurons is what it looked like.
So I'm glad you said this, by the way, because what you're telling me is reaffirming theories I have.
Yes.
Again, with the cosmic web, what you're looking at was, again, Earth's the proving ground, and you got to look at what the next phase is for you anyway, wherever that is in the cosmic web.
The guy that was with me, he told me that's the fabric of humanity. And I thought, okay, well, that's really important because it was so immense over there. Like it was the most important thing that I had witnessed or that I encountered over there was this fabric of humanity. And it just radiated love and knowledge. And it just seemed eternal. It had been there forever. It will be there forever.
Of course.
And I was like, "Can I go to it?" And he was like, "No, that's not for you." And so I got directed back to the left, and then zap, I woke up in my body and I was crumpled over on the couch. And I kept trying to like sit up. And when I did, I was falling over because I'd had a stroke. So my right arm was limp. I had gone deaf. I lost all my hearing in the left ear. And so I wear hearing aids now because of that. Never did recover the hearing after that. Other
things have sharpened, I imagine.
Yes, yes. I went through quite an ordeal afterwards. I waited for my husband to get home. I called my father-in-law, and he lived right across the street because it's the family farm. And so he came right over because I tried to talk to him, and I couldn't even talk. I was slurring words and making no sense. And he was over there within, you know, seconds, 30 seconds. I mean, he's in my door. And so within 10, 15 minutes after that, my husband arrived home with the kids. And I said, "Okay, you've got to take me to the hospital." And the hospital's 30 miles away, and it's a small county hospital. And so we called like one of my good doctors that knows me well. And he knows what, you know, he said, "You're having a stroke. We've got to get you to the hospital." So I get up there and they run all kinds of scans and stuff. And this small county hospital misses it. And they literally sent me home. And so what ensued was 2 years of me battling, going to the hospital and going to my neurologist and begging for further tests. And you're missing something. I literally went to the other side. There is something wrong here. And my head was like, it felt like lava going through my skull. Horrendous pain.
Well, yeah, understand. One, the gunshot you stated earlier, when something pops, it's in your head when it popped. So it's amplified, right? Like if you ever get a science fiction, have fluid in your ears and just move your head around, you could hear that, even though it's very minuscule, it's tiny. And the reason you went through that suffering, going to and from a doctor, you have medical training. I worked in radiology for a long time.
Okay.
And I remember learning medicine and becoming a crazy hypochondriac. Everything. I mean, I was diagnosing everything you could think. It was crazy. Uh-huh. So what's happening with you is, and I, when people say paranormal, understand they mean parallel to the normal. And
right.
You witness something parallel to the normal. And you have to, and something in your mind is trying to default to logic. And that's why you want these tests. You need a logical explanation for something supernatural.
I was physically suffering, Adam. I was nearly fainting every day. I lived for 2 years there. I lived half in this world and half in the other. Like I felt still that I could die anytime. And I felt extremely still entangled with the other side. And that still remains. Like if I can go into meditation, I can access the void still to this day. But that first 2 years, it never left me. I was terrified to die again and go to the void. But I was so tired of living in such extreme pain on this side. And we ended up selling our house and moving to Oklahoma City, where they had much bigger hospitals and much better equipment. And they immediately sent me down for testing, and they fed a wire up into my brain and injected dye and everything. And they woke me up on the table and said, "We found it. You know, you should not be here. You know, we don't know how you've survived this, but you have. And that's amazing. And so there's nothing for us to do now because you've survived for 2 years and it's kind of healed on its own." And that's one of the things that happens after a near-death experience, is that people turn to kind of alternative healing and sound healing. And that was one of the first things that I did, was I found 432 hertz. And so I would listen to that all day. I can't listen to like heavy music and stuff now. I can't deal with, you know, lots of lights, and I get overstimulated very quickly as a result of that.
So as a result of that as well, are you having more, are you finding yourself more in tune with paranormal experiences?
Well, and that's where this all comes back around.
Oh, I see. Because I'll tell you, a guy got into a car wreck. I don't remember what year it was. Really massive head injury. Mm-hmm. And he could play piano now at a master's level and has no idea how to read music. Nothing. So, and I say this a lot too, the human computer, the brain, very powerful. We don't use it to its full capacity. If we did, we'd go insane. It would just be non-possible, right? But different people, and I think everyone's psychic. They just don't have the ability to tap into that yet. They don't use that part. For in your case, what I think you're going to lead into is like what a lot of people lead into. You've opened a doorway. And when you say, you know, from childhood experiences, you're having paranormal experiences, which lead to UFOs, which, by the way, there's a lot of parallels between those two worlds, a lot.
Yep. Well, and that's, again, where I'm leading. Adam, we need to talk more often. you're reading my mind here. That's exactly it. After I kind of healed up some from my near-death experience and from the aneurysm itself, it took me a few years. And I was in and out of the hospital there for the first couple of years, in and out of the ICU. We had, you know, at times we were planning my funeral and what to do with the children and, you know, who I wanted to step in and kind of guide them in my regard, you know, if I were to pass. And so whenever I was well enough, my husband said, "I'm taking you to Roswell." That was my one regret. I always wanted to go to Roswell. And so he said, "We're doing it. You know, I know you're not 100%, but we're going." And so we went down there for the annual festival that they have, celebrating the crash and everything. And we took the kids and made a whole trip of it. And we had a wonderful time. And on the way home, I said, "You know, I wonder if MUFON is doing anything in Oklahoma, you know, or if we could join and maybe listen in on some of their meetings or something." And so I'm looking it up on my phone on the, you know, long drive through the desert on the way back. And I ended up contacting Doug Wilson and said, you know, is anything
love
going on?
Love Doug Wilson. That guy is fantastic.
He's amazing.
Yeah, and he speaks highly of you. He spoke. You're the reason I found you is because of Doug Wilson.
Really?
Yeah. He's the one who's like, "Listen, man, you got to talk to Mindy." So I was like, "All right, I'll look her up."
He's awesome. I really have a special place in my heart for him. He sat and was so patient with me and answered all of my questions for like 2 or 3 hours. I literally kept him on the phone forever.
Oh, he's a wealth of knowledge, man. Like we were in the podcast I did with him, we discussed like, you know, the what you should use in investigating and the different mm-hmm. instruments, and his knowledge is incredible. Like, and I have him coming on again because there's just so much more to learn from that guy.
Absolutely. And that's why he is in the position he's in. He was made for it. Yeah. And I am so grateful for him. And so I got with him and he said, okay, well, Oklahoma doesn't have anything happening there. There's not really a chapter, but if you want to work towards that, I said, well, I'll do that then, you know, I'm at home and, not working or anything, might as well. So I dove in and I joined officially in 2019. And then in 2020, I was promoted to state director. And then here we are today. And we just started having our online meetings for our chapter. And, you know, we're growing and building all the time. We have 4 field investigators here in Oklahoma now. And we have about 70 cases a year here. And so we stay pretty busy. I had no idea that Oklahoma had so many sightings, but it does. And so that's kind of how I got involved with MUFON. And funny enough, I didn't have any UFO sightings. I had all these, you know, ghost sightings. I had encountered all kinds of different entities. I had a run-in with a succubus once, which I know that's the female side, but it had been attacking some Air Force friends that I had, and I was house sitting at their house, and I ended up encountering this thing and asked them about it. And absolutely, it had been attacking them, and down to the very description with the red dress and the long brown hair and the crazy laugh. And so I had encountered different types of these entities. And so up to the point that I joined MUFON, I just had a healthy interest in UFOs. I had never seen anything, but that changed quickly after I signed on. I started learning about CE5, and I thought, well, you know, if I've been to the other side, I wonder if I could reach out and, you know, make mental contact with some of these things. And I went outside and had my family there. It was a nice summer night, and brought the kids out and had the neighbor kids were out laying on blankets, and we're looking up at the sky. And sure enough, we have these telltale flash bulbs that start going off in succession, just around random parts of the sky over us. And I mean, it happened quick, Adam. It was within 5 minutes that these things were showing up and flashing. And so I thought, wow, there's really something to this. Okay. So I was happy that I had finally seen something relating to the UFO phenomenon, but it really, the first time I saw something really big related was in regards to a case that I had worked. And there was a guy that said that he was a UFO magnet and that he could call these UFOs in. And he had submitted pictures of some of these UFOs that he had caught. And I thought, okay, well, let me go out and meet up with this guy and see what he can do. And so we did. We met up up in northern Oklahoma, and we had another investigator and me, and then a MUFON member that's also an experiencer, and then the gentleman himself and one of his friends. So there were 5 of us up on this hill. And we had been up there for 2-3 hours and saw a couple of questionable lights. And I thought, okay, well, you know, I'll go home and check against flight radars and stuff and see if I can rule out what any of those were. And, you know, it was an interesting night. And so we pack up all of our gear and we're ready to head down this hill, which was kind of a trek. But the other experiencer and the UFO magnet guy, they were talking about birds and how they relate to UFOs and how each of them have had these bird sightings, and particularly owls. And the UFO magnet said it was cranes for him. And at that, not 20 feet away from us are these power lines, and about 15 feet up is where the lines are hanging. And he said, look up there. And here comes this huge crane. And these sandhill cranes, they have a wingspan of up to 7 foot. So this is bigger than a full-grown man. And this thing swoops down to about 10 feet over our heads and then soars up, and I could see the individual feathers on this thing. I could see, you know, the tan and white, and it held its head like kind of in a craned manner, and it swooped down. It went up into open sky, got about 60 to 80 feet away, and then just blinked out of existence.
Man.
We all just gasped. I mean, I was not expecting something like that. I was expecting to see maybe, you know, a craft, you know. Yeah. This was shortly after I had first become a field investigator. And I was like, I have not been briefed at this level, you know, to experience disappearing birds here. But that's exactly what happened in front of five of us. And of course, the two experiencers, they weren't even bothered by it at all.
Yeah. You know, talk about, you got to understand, these are advanced entities, advanced. Mm-hmm. Extreme, they have a big heads up on us, right? Mm-hmm. So you got to, everyone I speak to about this, I try to kind of explain it to them. Like, they can allow you to perceive what you need to perceive. You know, again, your brain is a computer, and they can manipulate that with energy. Same, like, yeah. That's why I see the parallels with ghosts as well. Because spirits would have to use energy, manipulate energy to touch someone, whether it be positive or negative, it's going to feel the same. It's going to suck, you know? Mm-hmm. As far as the succubus goes, this planet's 4 billion years old, right? Give or take. Who knows what existed here prior to us? What civilizations might have been there before us? And here's a big one for people of religion. They say, well, you know, not of God. Well, I don't call him God. I call him a source, creator of all. Undoubtedly, right. When you look at the universe and how unique it is, and it's almost clockwork across the board. It used to be it's just expanding out, but now we're seeing it's just not the case. It's operating like an enormous clock. So 4 billion years old, and I say this to the paranormal people specifically, when they're referencing demons and dark entities, and we don't know what existed here. Like, it could have been humanoid. It could have been an intelligent species. It could have been something that was just downright disgusting. Because, I mean, as far as we know, the dinosaurs, but, you know, those are large animals. And, yeah, we could see the fossil record. But if humans passed, right, and 4 billion years passed, there'd be no record of us. We would be dust, gone, oblivion. Just our energy would move to either the next level or whatever level perceiving, or the ones that hang behind. So as far as the aliens and UFOs, I have a belief system. I shared this with Doug. I think that the smaller gray aliens, I think those are advanced robotics, biorobotics, with a consciousness upload. And the larger ones, which I hear from, might be the biology themselves that sit well outside of our planet. They send the little guys in to do the job. They're the drones. They're the workers. And then they stay. And another thing that baffles me, when I hear about them going through the walls, I think about what we're doing. I always compare things to humanity's technology and what we plan to do. I think they can project themselves easily. I mean, it's explainable in a lot of ways. Like the gray aliens, the ones I call robots, the eyes, that sensors, cameras, a multitude of instruments inside those eyes. Now, the parallel, imagine an advanced, let's say you and I, or on a ship, we find this species on another planet. We want to study them, right? Because I think we're under a long-term study. We go to another planet, we find this other species, they're really intelligent, and we're keeping an eye on, and then we see a ghost, and we're like, what the hell is that? So now we go from watching the species running around to, like, now there's something, you know, parallel to the normal down there. We're going to definitely pay attention. That's my theory on Skinwalker Ranch and other places like that. Those are the Petri dishes. That's where they're doing the study. And that's why you hear these billionaires are like, well, I can never get anything on film. It's because you have an advanced something above watching the same thing you are, and they're just making sure that they get everything and you don't, you know?
Yeah.
So I make room for a lot, Mindy. I make room for a lot. I always.
I think you've hit on a lot of different things there. I try to approach my cases as far as MUFON with an open mind, but of course, I bring my own thoughts and experiences into things as well. And I try not to let that interfere with my investigations. Normally, I'm being a nurse. I want proof, you know, I want physical proof. But on the other side of things, I've had so many experiences that I don't try to lock myself into physical proof. And I say that, you know, these are my thoughts. These are not necessarily ones of MUFON. I think there's so many different thoughts. You know, people have different thoughts within MUFON and different opinions. But for me, I came back from my NDE feeling very much like this was a simulation. I felt like I was re-entering the Matrix, like I was getting rebooted into my character.
That makes like, sense. I mean, yes. Think about what you're saying.
And that's what it was. It was, I don't know if you play video games. Me and my husband will play video games. And, you know, you build your character and then you hit start. And then, boom, you're in the game. And then your consciousness is controlling these little people, you know, with just a flick of a thumb. And that's kind of how I felt, was that my consciousness was injected back into this realm. And I had to don this suit to exist here. And it took me a while, really, for my brain to reintegrate back into this existence. But that said, I can't look at, you know, so-called aliens as necessarily physical forms. I think that people try to ascribe, you know, physical forms to these things because they see us humans as having physical form.
It makes it but relatable.
Our true state is pure consciousness. We are just energy. We are conscious beings. And I think that there are different types of these conscious beings coming from another dimension. I think where I was kind of the source dimension. One of that being I encountered, I can't tell you what kind of being he was. He could, you know, inject himself into a human suit. He could inject himself into a gray alien suit. You know, with you have to build a suit here within our environment. So you could have an entity from the source realm, and they go off world to another planet, and they use materials there to build a UFO, or they build a body to exist here in our reality. We're going to look at that being humans and go, oh, well, they're from another planet because there's materials from another planet. But are they really originating there, or are they really originating from a source reality? And they're using materials in order to build a vehicle to be here. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it actually ties more to my theory than you think.
Okay.
When I say the cosmic web, look at the cosmic web. We only recently discovered everything's connected. You know, before we had the technology, we just that's just open space. We now know everything's connected.
Mm-hmm, now, absolutely.
Now think about what fiber optics does. It uses energy and light to transfer information across everywhere, right? Instantly. Now look at the human brain and the construct. Now keep in mind, the consciousness and energy, whether it be alien or here, ancient or current or futuristic, it's all from the same source. Right. And so when I say aliens and their conscious upload and our uploads, it's all connected. So they come here, but they still come from the same source. Like ancient man and whatever lived here 4 billion years ago still came from the same source, the same creator. And that's when I say the source, I'm referencing God. That is the source, right? I just don't view it as the angelic entity other people view it as. It's just a source. And so that being said, to your point, when you're done here, your consciousness, your energy in this proving ground of Earth is now back to the source, ready to be uploaded or downloaded elsewhere, depending. And or you're doing so great here, we're re-downloading you here. We're recycling you. Or you're a real jerk here in a proving ground. We don't know if you go to the next one, you're being recycled or erased. We're not sure how that works. Some of them have pushback. But like you were saying, I agree. I think you are a download. I think we all are. And aliens might be here, and even as advanced as they may be to the whatever degree, even they don't fully comprehend the source. Nothing could, right? That's what makes it that all-powerful source. So, yeah, I make room for that, too. And, again, even speaking to you, I'm going to evolve the way I think. I'm going to sit down, digest everything, write it out, because it's too hard for people to open and admit, you know, maybe I don't have it all right, because I don't have it all right. I'm going to have, I just like having this conversation with you, open my eyes to a few things. Someone down the road is going to open my eyes to some new things. It's always going to happen that way. So yeah. I really, like you said, I think you are download. I think you didn't. And when I say that subspace you were in earlier, you were between, you know, the upload download phase. I'm like, well, we're going to keep you here. And the person that was that presence you felt, I've heard a lot about those. I call those the social worker.
Yeah.
Because every time I hear about them, that's what I comes to my mind. The social worker. I don't know, well, we're going to figure out where your case is. Well, it turns out the big the people upstairs decided you're not going anywhere. You're staying here.
You know? Pretty much. Yeah, so. He wasn't being nice to me. He was like,
yeah, it's his job.
You're not going to be here forever.
Yeah, it's his job. He's like, oh, another one.
Calm down.
Yeah. So just sit down and relax while we figure out your paperwork's coming. You know.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I interpreted it.
Yeah, so but, I don't try to get over philosophical. I think very differently from a lot of people. Because when I first, again, I've never witnessed anything, and I'm starting to believe that's because, well, I don't know, maybe they don't like me. You know, maybe I pass on, go to the next world. Like, I don't know, you're a jerk, man. We're not gonna talk to you. You know that? I mean, it's not impossible, but in your case, I think you channeled something. I think something opened up, and I think in. And especially in the near future, we're going to know more. I'll tell you why. More and more private industry is launching into space. And those people aren't going to keep their mouth shut. They don't care. For those people, they see something up there that's concrete. That's a YouTube like. That's a sensation. That's going viral. They're not going to hush up. They have no reason to. Most of the reason we don't get full disclosure, in my opinion, is because humanity will lose control over the masses. Imagine for you, imagine religion. You'd come out and tell someone there's no God. They're going to be like, why didn't I just kill a neighbor? I never liked him. You know, so you got to have these rules in play. But yeah, and MUFON, by the way, so diverse. That's so when you were saying you approach things and you see things differently, good for you and good for MUFON. I think I applaud them for having that kind of diversity. It allows you to have what they call a real panel where there's no one thing for certain across the board, you know?
Right. I even see that within like our local team. I mean, we have guys that are total nuts and bolts, whereas I really enjoy the ones that when we get cases that are more in the gray and has multiple forms of paranormal activity happening. So we'll get ones that, you know, oh, well, I saw a UFO. It was a triangle that flew over. But then there was a fairy there that showed up. And then I saw a ghost walk by, you know, it sounds insane, but we have multiple cases that have happened here in Oklahoma within the last few years that we have gotten. And even to that point, we have gotten cases where, and this was one that kind of took me by surprise, was I thought, you know, most entity cases would end up being, you know, small grays, but that was not the case. Instead, the main thing that I'm seeing here is these transparent entities, and people will describe them as kind of looking like the predator. And I've had one case where a lady described seeing invisible humanoid creatures, and she could only see them like in the reflection in the mirror. And that's how she knew that they were human, but they were invisible. And so it got me thinking, like, how do you differentiate between an invisible alien and a haunting? Right?
They're very aware of that. So look at today's military applications. There's a show called Future Weapons from 2008. It's a while ago. Mm-hmm. This was discussed about having suits on that would reflect light a certain way. Look, we're talking about an advanced entity that has a lot of time on them, you know? It's very feasible. And this isn't the first time I'm hearing that either, by the way. In some of the cases I read that span back to the 1910s were the same thing. Like, they were saying it was a ghost, but it seemed it was real. Mm-hmm. Every time I hear these cases, I think the same thing. Like, of course. I mean, they could project. Again, I say that strongly. There's a concert Tupac was at. This guy's dead a long time. But he looked like he was there from a projection. And that is yesterday's technology from us, you know? And then you think about the concepts that we're utilizing for these suits that we're going to wear that's going to reflect light and or maybe even make it so we absorb the background, right? I mean, these are whenever you want to question what's impossible, read about patents for military applications and ideas. Blow your Absolutely. Mind. Blow your mind what we're thinking about. That's our most advancement. Every great thing we have today, from GPS to cell phones to the internet, was a military application long before the public even touched it. Long before. So then you take that into consideration of what's out there that's been around for a few thousand years more than us. And the sky's the limit. They can do whatever they please. You know, the F-117 stealth fighter was a project in the I believe it was like the 70s, right? The F-22 Raptor was a project in the late 80s, early 90s. Imagine what's a black project right now. You
know? Yeah.
And then put, you know, X 10,000 years on that. It's the sky's the limit, you know? I mean, here's another example. You ever read about ancient Greeks?
They have somewhat.
They make these wonderful inventions they made. Mind-boggling. And I was watching this documentary. I'm like, why did they not proceed with that? What happened there? I mean, and then you find out Rome marched in, Catholicism, Christianity, and Constantine, and it's against God, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're 2,000 years behind the ball on technology. Who knows where we'd be right now? You know, it wasn't until like the 1900s when we really started saying, let's see where we go with technology all out, right? Because you couldn't even study other planets at some point in time without being burned at a stake. You know? Yeah. So it's hard. It really is hard for us to comprehend what we're looking at because we don't understand it. You know, telepathy with the aliens that I hear a lot. They're like, oh, that's crazy talk. Okay. Well, maybe in the 70s, 80s, it was crazy talk. We have Bluetooth now, right? And it seems to me that the way they communicate is their form of Bluetooth. Elon Musk is talking about having Neuralink, where you could just know. You could communicate with someone, no words. You just know what's in one another's mind. They're probably at that. And that's us now. And we're not even there yet. Imagine something with thousands of years on us. So
absolutely,
make room for it. And as far as the paranormal, where everything is energy, everything on this planet has an energy source, everything. And that runs back time to that whole cosmic everything's connected thing. So when I say parallels, I think there's just a lot there, and we're just not capable of comprehending it yet. It's not really a question of is it real. It's a question of can we comprehend that?
Right. And to that point, as far as the parallels, one of the things that I started noticing with my MUFON cases is I would be interviewing these experiencers, and I started asking, have you ever had a near-death experience? And sure enough, a large percent of them have. And I was reading Kathleen Martin's book, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. And I came across a part where she had mentioned briefly that in the experiencer questionnaire, she had done a study and found that 55% of abductees have had a near-death experience. And so that kind of blew me away. I started going, okay, well, other people have noticed this link between UFO experiences and near-death experiences. And it's not just something that I'm, you know, trying to make a connection here.
Oh, no.
And I ended up looking up, you know, I was looking online, trying to find some more information, you know, see what other people had maybe looked at. And I came across the Omega Project, which was performed by Dr. Kenneth Rain, who was one of the founding members of IONS. And IONS is the International Association of Near-Death Studies.
Wait, that was the Omega Project, you said?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, let me write that down.
Yeah, write it down. I just finished it, actually, and I am blown away. He originally was studying near-death experiencers. He was with the University of Connecticut, I believe. And he had done a whole study with near-death experiencers and then had a friend that said, hey, why don't you read Communion here? I think that you're going to find some similarities to what you're studying with your near-death experiencers. And he said, I really don't want to do UFO stuff, but I'll read it because it's you, you know. And then so he read through it and he said, I'll be darned. There is something here. And so he set to do a whole new study, and he incorporated UFO experiencers and near-death experiencers. And so he ran all of these different battery of tests as far as, you know, questionnaires. And what he did, he asked questions on one section that ruled out fantastical thinking. So like these people weren't like prone to fantasy worlds. They were more prone to tapping into alternate realms. So they weren't imagining, you know, outside playing with dragons when they were a kid. They were literally sending their consciousness into other places and interacting with entities from other places. So he was able to differentiate between these two. He also said that both experiencers had a high level of trauma in their childhood that kind of spurred on the ability to dissociate and to send their consciousness other places, which would obviously be a coping mechanism. I can't even talk.
Right, I know what you're saying.
But, and so that was kind of the personality profile. He said that it was an encounter prone personality. And so that kind of set the stage for it. But the big finding was the after effect. So after someone has had a long-term UFO encounter or, you know, ongoing abductions, and when someone has had a near-death experience, they both come back with very different and changed thinking. So one of the main things for me, I know that most near-death experiencers, if they're married, I think it's something like 70-80% of marriages fail after a near-death experience.
Yeah, I've read that too.
The people change so much. And if you caught earlier, I'm actually married to a pastor. So he's not actively preaching anymore. And that wasn't to do with my near-death experience. It's just where life has taken us. But he was so good to me and so patient and, you know, said, let's research this together, you know, let's learn together and work through this together. And I was really one of the fortunate ones that he was so good to me, because I know I changed so much. I have a really hard time with organized religion now. I have a really hard time with politics of any type.
I really can't
handle hatred and, you know, the meanness towards people. It really just kind of crushes my soul now. Before I'd be like, I can't believe they're saying that.
It's treachery, but, you know, to say what you're saying earlier about the near death experiencers. And before I say this, I don't speak from science. I have no science background. I speak from pure curiosity and imagination and theory all wrapped into one. When you have someone has a near-death experience, which is very traumatic, or someone that has childhood has been abused, or some head injuries, all of these things, like you said, or even if you're an introverted person, your brain's compensating somehow. Mm-hmm. And when you go to the world of imagination, you could tap realms. It's almost like meditating. You can go to places other people don't go to. Like some of the geniuses of this planet have a wild imagination. You have to. You got to think outside the box, right? Mm-hmm. So that being said, when you say about these injuries and the traumatics, your brain compensates, opens gateways. And, you know, so then a part of the brain that was otherwise not used is now being, you know, it's getting energy source to it, right? And who knows what the limit is for us with that? And as far as humanity, I don't know. I don't have anything against organized religion. I don't have anything against politics. I just don't like politics. I don't believe in it. We're still doing Roman things in modern times. It blows my mind, you know? But as far as religion, across the board, it has a pretty good message. Unfortunately, there's people that take these messages and they twist it around and, you know, fly a plane in this, and then they get, you know, they sensationalize certain parts and then they radicalize it and it gets dangerous. Now you have an advanced life form watching this planet, right? And they see this. And here's another answer for people listening. When are they going to come to us? They're not. People are crazy. You know, if you ever want to see the real mean-spirited side of humanity, get on social media, say something pleasant, and they will find a way to twist it into something negative. You know, it's unfortunate. We got to behave like a species. I say this often. We're not going to do better until we behave like a species and start caring for one another, because, again, there's a source. And then there's answers. And if we can't be good to one another, we have really no chance of doing greater things together. You know, we should evolve like our technology. I mean, we're behind the technology, you know, but
yeah, you said that beautifully, Adam.
I appreciate it.
But it really, that's really kind of, that's where all of this has led, as far as the near-death experiencers and the UFO experiencers. They both kind of come to that same conclusion, you know, with the oneness. We're all one. We've got to take care of our planet. We've got to take care of each other. We've got to learn how to love each other and get along here for the betterment of our species. And yeah, that's really the last thought that comes together from both of them. People are changed very much in their thinking and the way that they operate and the way that they treat other people. True experiencers, they don't come out of it unchanged. And normally they're changed for the better. I'll tell you, I was talking to Nancy Evans Bush, and she is a near-death experiencer. She's actually one that coined the term distressing near-death experience. And she was the secretary for IONS when they first set up shop. And I was writing back and forth emails with her recently, and she had relayed that she felt led to be there at IONS. And it's an incredible thing that after a near-death experience or even a UFO experience, there's many experiencers that say that they feel like their life, it has a driving force behind it. And I absolutely feel like that. Even just sitting here talking with you, Adam, this was like a lifelong dream since I was a kid. I always wanted to, you know, be on sightings or, yeah, you know, how do I become a paranormal expert, you know? And I was always too scared to do that. And then, you know, have an aneurysm, come back and build yourself up. And the next thing I know, I'm investigating UFOs for MUFON. And the next thing I know, I'm state director. And the next thing I know, I'm talking to you on a podcast, you know, and these are things that, like, I dreamed of doing this stuff, you know, and it's just come so easily afterwards. Just one thing after another just keeps rolling in. And it's like, life is so easy right now. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. It's something that several experiencers have relayed, that they feel that their life is just kind of directed on a path and kind of laid out afterwards, after their big, you know, life-changing experience. It guides them from then on of what they're supposed to be doing in this lifetime. And so it's kind of incredible.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Your experience after the dust settled, right? Because there's, you know, there's the dust of the insecurity, and you're questioning your mortality, which is normal for a human being, mm-hmm, right? Then what happens is your perspective changes and you repurpose your direction. And it's usually people that repurpose their direction, in your case, is a positive one. You've become more engaged with what you want to learn, and that's powerful. It gives you life purpose. And I think the key is to not become an expert. In fact, I don't, very seldomly do I speak with people with the word expert. Mm-hmm. I think the best part of the best way to approach is be the student.
Absolutely.
If you could be a student, you're always going to want to learn more. It's when you get that title of experts when you plateau, or at least in the eyes of others, and then you're content. And if you become complacent, you're not going to accept new information. You can't approach anything with glasses on. You know what I mean? You got to take the sunglasses off to see everything. Zero filters. And yeah, so I think the key to, for you and for me, is just remain a student as long as possible, forever, in fact. You know, it's okay to be a professional hunter of this, that, and the other thing. That's great. It means it's what you do. But becoming an expert's a dangerous business, because then you're not going to accept the new information. And you are a very enlightened person. And I could just tell by talking to you, you like learning new things and you like discovering new things. And I think you will discover much more, especially in the near future. I'm going to be eventually going to get out there and do a documentary. That's why I'm building this network with people like you and a lot of other MUFON people I've spoken to, paranormals. I speak to a lot of cops on the show too, you know, mm-hmm, because, and these are detectives. So I get to learn strategies. So when I'm in the field, especially Douglas Wilson, that guy's got his shit together, man. You know, I learn these things so I could apply these in the field. I go to the spots. And again, I've never witnessed anything, but that's, listen, there's a childhood curiosity in my heart. And that child, for the good or for the bad, speaks louder than the adult, you know, every time. So I pass no judgment. I don't believe in bad information. I think all information is good. You just got to filter correctly. And everyone I speak to, I treat them identically, the same. Because, like, even speaking to you, I've been enlightened just talking to you. You're a pleasure to speak to. So it makes it easier, you know?
I think you've been talking to some wonderful people. Just speaking with you this evening, I think you're on the right path. I mean, it's taken me a few years to start kind of forming my thoughts on where I'm going and what I think of all of this. But it seems like you've come to very similar conclusions. And I don't think that it will ever be a conclusion unless anything is proven. But like you said, just continuing to learn. And I know that, you know, if I listen to this podcast 3 years down the road, I'm sure I'll be like, oh, you idiot. No, if only you knew this and this and that. I'm sure I'll be on different views by then.
That could be said for anybody, even Isaac Newton. You know, if this guy, Isaac Newton, saw what we're doing today, he's like, damn it. So it's the truth. Before we close, is there anything else you want to add?
I don't know. We've covered a lot.
We have. And we're definitely going to be, I'm going to have you on again. I know we are. Absolutely. In fact, before we go, don't hang up. I'm going to say goodnight to the audience. Say goodnight, Mindy, because we're going to talk after.
All right. Good night.
Take care, everyone.